From a use case perspective, I mean, it's always best thing to do is just lean on prior experiences. Now, it may not be exactly the same, right? But you're going to have some sort of knowledge somewhere. So, like when I did consulting, I did 57 different plants in about 6 years, right? So, no matter where I went, I probably hadn't seen that particular application the first time or before. But when I walked in there the first time, it was one of those where, okay, I can rely on something that I've done in the past.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solenox. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, the podcast where we unpack systems and strategies that leaders use to scale their business and with technology. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. So before I introduce today's special guest, this episode is really brought to you by Solenox. So at Solenox, we partner with leaders of scaling technology and IT service companies where that are really struggling with the operational bottlenecks, broken internal processes, and inconsistent growth. So what we do is we help them implement the strategic automation they need to build a true growth engine. So allowing you to focus on vision, not firefighting. So if this sounds like your organization, connect with me on LinkedIn. Now I'm really thrilled to have a special guest with us today who is an expert in this engineering space. So we have Keegan Dillon. He's the founder of Join Up Services and the co-host for Automation Breakfast. So Keegan, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to get into this discussion today.
Yeah, man. First off, I wanted to like say with Joiner Services for the folks that are like tuning in, like help us understand what is Joiner Services? What kind of brought you to it, to found it, and you know, your journey a little bit of it?
Sure. Yeah, no problem. A little bit about my background, heavy into consulting and contracting work, automation, robotics, weld engineering. And then during that 2020 time, whenever everything's kind of slowed down, that's when I really started to build up this company. I always had an idea and a drive to start my own business. And I did that with Joiner Services. Basically, what it is a platform where contractors are able to build their own profiles. And customers and clients will come in and post available contract work. And then basically we help connect those two client and individual together. And then at the end of the day, we send out lots of different self-employed contractors to jobs all over the continental United States, as well as sometimes when we can't find our self-employed individuals, we also work with different what we call collaboration partners, smaller engineering service firms or staffing companies that have robot programmers, weld engineers, controls engineers, technicians, etc. So that was kind of how I started the business almost 5 full years ago now, and it's been growing year over year ever since. We're a little bit slower this year. I think everyone is kind of slowing down here, but looking to ramp up here towards the end of the year as well. So that's just a little bit about that. And then again, with Automation Breakfast, it's basically a podcast I started several years ago that kind of grew and developed into what it is today. It's one of the only in-studio podcasts on automation, AI, and robotics.
Man, so what kind of, you know, with it, you know, they kind of have a twofold question on it. So what brought you to want to like first, like start the podcast and kind of go forward with it? Was it something that you always wanted to do, or did it kind of come, you know, naturally on?
You know, it's one of those that just kind of rolled into a marketing type thing where, hey, I need to get my name out there and let people know what I do, who I am, and then also have different conversations with engineers. So the initial name of the show was called Engineers in Automation. And it was a little bit different show than your standard, hey, what product is this, you know, learning. I was more about wanted to learn about the individuals. How did, you know, founders, how did senior level engineers, managers get into the roles that they currently are in? You know, some of the lessons learned that they've had, you know, where did they go to school? And we just kind of talked about their journey in engineering and automation. And then that kind of rolled into I have a couple buddies that we would meet for breakfast once a month, And I had started to slow down my podcast because my wife and I had a baby, and you know how that goes. So something had to give. So it was taking up a lot of time to edit the show myself. So my buddies and I were kind of like, hey, we meet for breakfast once a month. Why don't we just turn this into the show? And I said, well, I've already got an awesome platform. And that's sort of how it rolled into. So we've done, I think, 6 shows, 7, you know, in process, we'll say. And it's become very successful through our YouTube page. We get several thousand views per month on our stuff and growing. So we're just now starting to rebrand into Automation Breakfast, as well as, you know, go and venture out, now that we see that it is working, venture out into different socials like TikTok, Facebook, etc.
Yeah, man, it's, you know, I love that you already, your friends, it's just kind of really evolved naturally from you already having breakfast to already kind of setting up. So you already have that chemistry, that symmetry with your friends and everything, and just roll over. People can feel that. Have you felt that though, like as a founder kind of coming on, you feel like, was it, do you feel like now in today's age that this is how, you know, founders, just with entrepreneurs, that they have to be somewhat of a, I wouldn't say an influencer, but really putting them more of a face to the brand, so to speak? Or what are your thoughts? Yeah,
that of course is partially what it is. But I think really for me, it's creating content that no one else is doing. And that's what I've seen. You see a lot of these quote unquote influencers who are big now, but it's only because they started 10, 15 years ago on some of these platforms, and they're just kind of pushed into the quote unquote influencer type role. Whereas, you know, with somebody who's just starting out now, the best thing I could say is make your own content, make unique content to your industry. And that's what I've done. So whenever I post things, I generally don't post other things. I post my own blogs. I post my own data and information from my own websites. I've got multiple different websites that I run, and I share that information on LinkedIn, and I'm constantly posting or sharing, you know, my own content and pushing my own stuff out there. And it's different than everything else. And like I said, with Automation Breakfast specifically, there is no other in-studio podcast on automation. No one else is doing a sit-down. There's a lot of virtual stuff, but no one's really doing a sit-down talk, and it's more of a general conversation of things that your everyday person's interested in, not just people in the AI industry, people in the automation industry, or people in the robotics industry, right? It's stuff that we talk about, military stuff. We talk about police stuff. We talk about robots gone wild. We talk about, you know, different industrial aspects of manufacturing. So all these different aspects where your average person, hey, I'm kind of interested in that too. How does that work? So that's something that makes us unique, and what I would tell anybody who's starting off on their own, just make your own content. You know, find something that maybe you kind of like and mimic, but make it your own.
Yeah, and that's the key thing is authenticity, right? Of having it and kind of building on that. You know, well, so having it to where with joiner services, like on, you know, you kind of, you know, switching roles, and now you're on this more on this leadership focus and continue on the trends and bringing forward with these the whole features of joiner services as a whole. Have you had to adjust? What's kind of like your day to day? Are you still going in and still doing the work of that? Has that been a transition? The reason for it is because, you know, I'm coming in from a 9-to-5, coming in as a founder, CEO. So it's a switch of now having to think of a creative, thinking of the outcome focus. And I'm always curious with talking with other CEOs and mindsets of transitioning over to that leadership thought process.
Yeah. Yep. So initially, I was also doing a lot of things manually. And I think that's how most people start their business and build it, is, you know, do as much the nitty gritty as they can, because they can't afford outsourcing. They can't afford to have somebody else do it. Within the last year or two, we've actually really focused on automating as much as possible. And we're actually still working on doing some final tweaks and touches to some of the profiles so that we're completely hands off, and these people are able to build their own 100%, and, you know, filter and search a little bit easier. So these are some things that we ourselves are still working on, but we've built within the last, you know, 16 months probably, easier flow chart for people to join, and then for us in the background specifically to do our searches. We have a database that we use on the back end, because a lot of our contractors actually don't build a profile, they're not really too interested in it, and that's okay. We don't say, hey, you have to have a profile for this thing to work. In the ideal world, for me, it would be the best case scenario, because then it's everything's fully automated and I'm completely out of it. But a lot of the stuff within our database that we do have, we have all this contractor information. We can do searching and filtering. Is it AI that we're using? Probably not. It's probably more machine learning and just general searching that the database does for us. But that's also on a side of one of my biggest pet peeves about people that use the word AI, when in general some of the stuff's been around for 20 years and it's just machine learning, and now they just select the tag and put a sticker over it, and now it says AI, and their boss is happy. But that's a later conversation. But yeah, so a lot of it is just learning to, as you build and scale a business, how do you automate and get things a little bit easier for you on the front end, so you have more time, say, to reach out to clients, or more time to interact with people or potential customers, or give yourself a little bit more free time.
Yeah, I think it's a key point of what you were saying, because this has been going on for a while. And even now, I would say since, well, really 2024, but like really 25, you're really seeing a push, as you've said, of, the hype or the, the buzzword of AI, that it can, replace, and you can save companies, it can save so much money by replacing workers, which has, seen the use case of where it's a, it can be a disaster on if you fully implement AI. So, and then there's the other parts. You need to find like a balance between it. So do you like see, like, what do you see on the major shifts that you're seeing in the automation and in the space that you're in right now?
Yeah, so right now, I mean, especially in, say, robotic programming, right? You're seeing more and more, again, what I would consider probably machine learning, where vision systems are taking over. People are now using the teeth pendant to touch points for positions for a robot. Is that kind of stuff AI? We can argue about it all day. Is it more machine learning? In my opinion, yes. So you're seeing a lot more of that, where it's becoming easier to program robots. It's becoming a heck of a lot easier to program a PLC, right? That kind of work, those kind of day-to-day operations now are becoming a little bit easier. And I think what you're going to see in the next probably 3 to 5 years is some major shifts in the programming and how things work. But you're still going to need those PLC programmers, controls engineers, robot programmers to run through the systems and verify and check. You see all the time someone goes and writes code, and then they go through and check it, and it takes them now longer to check the AI code that was written than to actually, if they would have just done the darn thing themselves, right? So you're going to see a lot of these changes, though, because it is moving quickly, it is moving fast, and those companies that aren't keeping up and with these changes, they are going to get left behind. And now, left behind, does that mean they go out of business? I don't know. I don't think, I think a lot of people don't know that yet. But from a global standpoint, the companies that are willing to adapt and make these changes are going to become much more successful.
So with that on the side, from what you're seeing, what advice would you really give to these, companies, engineers that want to kind of stay ahead and, working with, Joiner on that side? What do you see, and what would you give on that, on that
Yeah, so
suggestion?
from a personal aspect, right, it's just basically getting as much hands-on time as possible, right? A lot of these engineers, to be honest, a lot of some of the older controls engineers and things like that aren't as willing to learn some of these newer technologies, or a little bit more stuck in their ways, will say, you're going to get left behind at the end of the day, right? And the younger guys who may be a little bit more hungry and willing to do some of the things and learn some of these new programs, they're going to start succeeding fast, and they're going to get paid for it. And so that's what we're seeing now too, is especially in the consulting and contracting world, the more boxes you can check on that resume, especially under that, machine learning, programming, JavaScript, all this different coded language that you used to take you 12 hours to do, now might take you 10 minutes. Like I said, in 2 or 3 years, those guys that know how to do that and can do that properly and fast, their value just increased dramatically. The people that don't learn that stuff are going to get left behind. Now, does that mean they're not going to be controls engineers anymore or robot programmers? No. There's still going to be opportunities and jobs, like we talked about. Not everyone's going to keep up with everything. And then from a business side too, right, you have these companies that they need to adapt. A lot of places and customers that that our contractors go to, their equipment's 20, 30 years old, right? The equipment just does not perform like a traditional equipment that's being sold today. And or they didn't do the maintenance on it. You know, you're not doing all these other things that you should be doing to keep your systems running as smoothly as possible without that downtime. And a lot of these companies that are trying to do some of these older refurbs, because that's always a big thing, I think they're going to find that, shoot, we probably should have spent a little bit extra money on a newer system that has a vision system, that has some sort of machine learning or AI tools along with it, that's going to be able to keep up with production for the next 10, 20 years, whereas the system that already is 10 or 20 years old is going to get left behind. We're going to have issues, you know, that may not have that machine learning that you would see that, hey, I'm getting wear down in feed tubes or gears are slowing down, and now that machine learning that would be on a standard or newer system, they don't have, therefore they don't know, therefore now a breakdown happens, they're down for 2, 3, 6 hours, who knows, and that just costs them, you know, tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars, right?
Yeah, and you know, with that being said, on the recommendation and seeing that, to keep ahead, to make sure that, you know, upgrading these systems and so forth, has that been the key focus for when you bring forward to your customers and partners on what's really working well for joining services, or is it an integrated whole of you utilizing that machine learning?
Yeah, sometimes, depending on what clients' needs are, right? Sometimes they'll reach out and ask our contractors, because again, my background's in welding and robotics. We have contractors that do design, electrical, panel builds, all this other stuff that I don't know, we'll say. And so they'll reach out to some of our guys when they're on site often and say, hey, is this the right equipment we should be doing? What's the latest tech that we need? What's this? And these are things that generally happen, especially during our interview process before a contractor even gets on site. We always try to set up virtual interviews between the contractor and client so they can ask them these sort of things. They know what to expect when they get on site, right? Because you don't want to have somebody get on site and you're expecting to do line support and you get there and it's an integration project, right? So some of these integration projects we go on and our guys get there and it's like, oh, shoot, this is not what we were told. What do I need to do to, you know, get these guys upgraded and up to date with the latest technologies? What do we need to order? And then come back in another 3 to 6 months, whenever the parts come in, and then install them. So that happens to us a lot.
You know, with it on, when you bring people on site, because I'm new to kind of understanding, it's so fascinating on having it to where now we have to think of the power line, all the actual hands-on approach that has to go into play. So what is usually the process of like workflow that what you've done to help automate that's really exponentially like helped for your service and then providing like better value to those, to your clients? I'm sorry.
Yeah. So generally most of our projects are like integration or installation projects, right? So hands-on, boots on the ground type stuff. And that when you're going to see a lot of people, you know, reach out to us and say, hey, we've got to get this equipment, this technology up and running, up to date. So we do a lot of that kind of stuff. You got to be careful too, as a quote unquote, we'll say a third party provider, staffing providers, how much you also tell the client, because you also don't want to go in there and say, hey, this is complete crap. You guys did this completely wrong. And it happened. And sometimes, you know, it's hard as a third party you're there to be as brutally honest as possible. And if the customer isn't doing something right, because potentially their end customer needs the right product, that's where kind of you have that authority and ability to kind of stand up and say, hey, maybe I don't see something that is being done properly here. And so that's where we definitely give some leeway to our people and say, hey, make sure you speak up if you don't see something that's not accurate. And, you know, from just a, whether it's machine learning, whether it's, you know, maintenance schedules, whether it's developing, you know, cycle time analysis, we want to make sure that there is upfront and honest with our customers so that their customers are happy. And that is one of the greatest benefits of being a contractor. You kind of have that ability to say, whoa, guys, I've seen this on a different project. We did it this way. It worked way better. The path we're going down maybe isn't right. And it's hard sometimes, because sometimes you're even looked at as kind of the bad guy because, you're going against the grain. But you have that ability to go against the grain when everybody else is saying, go this way. You can kind of say, well, hold on. what's the right thing to do. And that's where kind of we have the ability, you know, with the technologies and history that all of our contractors have, is to be able to say, hey, this should be done this way. And generally in most places, it always works out. So I think I got around to your question there.
No, you did. It kind of brings up, because especially for those that are like coming on that are utilizing the platform, I'm really curious to get your perspective of, you know, you hit a key point on how to balance, you know, being honest with the clients about their gaps and their mistakes, about while also, you know, you don't want to, like, you know, blow smoke up, but you want to kind of bring up, what would you say to those that are really on startups that don't have those use cases? Or what have you done when Joiner Services started? How did you kind of go around to getting to this stage of, if you didn't have any use cases, and how you went about, you know, with your clients?
Yeah. So from a use case perspective, I mean, it's always best thing to do is just lean on prior experiences. Now, it may not be exactly the same, right? But you're going to have some sort of knowledge somewhere. So like when I did consulting, I did 57 different plants in about 6 years, right? So no matter where I went, I probably hadn't seen that particular application the first time or before. But when I walked in there the first time, it was one of those where, okay, I can rely on something that I've done in the past. And that's generally the best way to go about looking at things like that, is even if it's writing new code, writing, you know, new designs, new mechanical features on a part, right? You know, we rely on those prior experiences. I just find that seems to work the best. And then it's a lot of trial and error too. I mean, I think you and I spoke before the show several times about podcasts and different things. And I've shared a bunch of insights with you that no one had given me, right? So networking as a contractor, huge. That's where you find a lot of your own clients. That's where you make a lot of new clients and find business. And then just kind of expanding on, you know, like we talked about, your socials and just getting the word out there, bringing in more potential prospects. And then that you can then in turn ask questions, right? Great thing about LinkedIn is people ask questions all the time. Hey, I've got this issue. How do I solve X? And you'll see sometimes 4 or 5 comments. Sometimes people will share it. Sometimes, you know, it snowballs into 100 comments, and then you've got people fighting. No, this is the right way to do it. No, this is the right way to do it. There's an individual I do follow who's very big in the welding industry, and basically they just ropes people the whole time. But it's very insightful because the way it's done is informative. And so, you know, you learn a lot. You just don't want to be on the other end of it, is what I'm going to say. But, you know, building that network and leaning on prior experience is always the best way to grow and build something that you aren't sure, right?
Yeah, and I really LinkedIn, I've really realized it now as kind of, I'm sure, as you know, what you're doing with the podcast and even with your blogs, you said you're very active, is it's a huge uptick of bringing your, it's a huge utilization of outreach. I would say even now, it's comparable even to the old school of having the cold email outreach of what now, yep, LinkedIn has, because now it's your personal brand. It's putting that in. People can feel your authenticity, and it builds upon that as a leader for that within your own business, you know?
So and people see you, right? I mean, even they may not comment, they may not like, but people see you. You know, I had one of our co-hosts who was down at Automate in Detroit here earlier this year. He had several people come up, oh, hey, watch the show, I've seen you. You know, and we didn't know who they were, but it was great. Hey, we interacted with them, and you know, it's just a cool experience. You know, so you never know who's watching. You never know who might see something that you share or like or comment on. And it's just a great way to then, you know, build and answer questions that you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's really showcasing on that. You know, so with that as kind of going in, as people are starting to see more, getting more on that outreach, where do you see, you know, Joiner Services like in the next 6 to 12 months? And even with your podcast, with the Amish Breakfast, where would you like to see it within, by, you know, this time next year?
Yeah, so we do have some targets for Joiner that we're going to try to make sure we close out by the end of the year. You know, but I think for us, the big one is automating as many processes as possible. So generally how it's working for us is anytime money's coming in, we're putting money right back into the business to build it, to automate it, to grow it and scale it properly. That is one of the biggest things that companies don't do, and don't pay yourself that much. And that's the other part that people don't understand is, oh, you have this big company, it's doing well, you're doing this. Well, technically, yeah, numbers may look good on paper, but in reality, what's coming home in the bank isn't that much because now I'm going to pay it into the company before I pay it into myself. And in turn, I'm expecting that return to come in the next, like you said, several years. And then that way, fully automate our system, our processes that we have. And we've done that with several of our, contracts and our billing and invoicing, all that stuff has been fully automated within the last 16 months. And now it's just working on the final lines of it. A little bit more expensive to deal with, so we're just slowly chipping away at those every month or so. Yeah, so like I said, we kind of are going through a rebranding right now. We have a target for the end of the year on a views that we're looking to get. We're getting anywhere from 5 to 7,000 views a month. We have, and again, that was just within the last 6 months that we've grown that. So we're really trying to ramp that up a little bit more. We've added several more socials. So we're anticipating by the end of the year some fairly good numbers if we can continually put out content that people like, that are they're interested in, that's learning as well as kind of fun. And then also too, we are going to be taking on some sponsorships here in the future as well. We've been approached by several companies already. However, we just felt like it wasn't the right time yet. So, from a sponsor, you got to be careful too with sponsors, depending on, you don't want us to ruin the show, right? So we've got to be sort of selective, yet also make sure that they can help support our branding and help build the show.
Yeah, I think sometimes I've even gotten it, but I think there's sometimes when people kind of start in, and as you said, just the usual typical, to be honest, I didn't even really see myself as an entrepreneur, like leading, like I just thought it was going to be the 9 to 5, and then it's just shifted over time. And now I'm enjoying, like, with the partnerships, working with clients, and overall the goal is to have more time to myself and put it into something I value. So, I mean, as you said, like before, just putting utilizing, just because of the numbers are big, it's just you're just reinvesting into the business. You're kind of moving forward. How can you enrich it? So I love it, man. And especially in terms of the podcasting, being very selective with, your sponsors and so forth. And it's just great. It's great to really see and, conversate with. So with it being with Joiner Services, with the goals and that you're looking, would you say is the solve the big the major challenge in the industry today? Like, what would you like to solve on that? What is it? And then how would you solve it?
Yeah, so one of the biggest problems that we're having right now is in the industry, all the reshoring that's going on. So there's a lot of companies that are reshoring, and most of the time you say, well, hey, that's not an issue. Part of the problem is people don't know yet where to funnel funds and where to funnel some of this money for growth, right? So a lot of these places now are dealing with higher tariffs, for example. So, okay, so now what do we have to cut? So a lot of times you're getting and seeing that in the industrial manufacturing area is, okay, how do we adjust these things? And then also too, from a consulting side, then how do we get into those businesses that, hey, we need this project, we need so many people, and then 2 months later, 2 weeks later, hey, the project's canceled, it's delayed 6 months. So that's one of the hardest things in this industry, and you get really used to it really fast, is jobs come fast and they go fast. So here today, gone tomorrow. And so what we always try to do is make sure to be as responsive as possible, as quickly as possible, turn things around as quickly as possible. And that kind of hopefully gives us an edge over other people. We've got automated email replies that automatically get sent out if people reach out. So again, there's more automation in the background. Is that more machine learning or what? Who knows? Or just MailChimp working really well. But one of those things that we're just trying to solve ourselves is, okay, we see a big 2026 coming. A lot of people in the industry do. A lot of things are getting, projects are getting turned back on, we'll say. So we're going to see, I believe, a big uptick, but it's just then being able to, okay, can we find a lot of people right now that are looking for work as contractors, are just kind of sitting and playing the waiting game until we can get things kind of moving forward. So I think we're going to see a big 2026. That's what the feel everyone's kind of got now. and we'll just kind of plan it out from there and hope for the best, right?
Right, exactly. So with that being said, then, like, with 2026 around, like, you know, by the start of the year, if you had like a magic wand to have it to where you could use AI for machine learning, for the case, to whip it around, either to eliminate a certain bottleneck with joiner services or to educate clients or to do in your day to day, what would that be? What would you say?
Everything. If you want your business to succeed, everything comes down to sales. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you've got a great product and nobody sees it, then you're not going to grow. So anything, that's what we've been working on literally the past several months, is developing better sales funnels. And how do we do outreach? How do we get people to learn more about us? We do get a lot of people through our website, new potential clients through the website, but then how do we convert those, right? And so it's really, like I kind of talked about, automating automatic replies, making sure people know that, hey, we're thinking about you, rather, you know, I'm in front of a computer, not at the time to respond. So that's a big one, is just, you know, how do you better automate your sales process, make a better sales funnel, and whatever you can do for that, doesn't matter what your business is, consulting, manufacturing, marketing, whatever it is, it all runs through sales. So that would be my, you know, for us, one of the things we probably struggle with the most is just client outreach and having new people find us, because we have within our network probably 1,100 contractors now. So we have the people. It's just making sure we find them new jobs. And for us, how do we automate, you know, bringing in more clients, because we've got so many people now within our network looking for work within that industrial manufacturing space.
Yeah, man, because, you know, you kind of brought it is all about sales. You know, I brought up, we had a client earlier, like they were a SaaS product and they had a phenomenal product and I'm realizing now on it that even with finding with proper sales funnels and you bringing in agencies or anything else, I think the key part, at least from what I've realized, is really understanding your partner's business. And then from there, like, because everybody uses the same tools in nowadays, whether it can be Instantly, whether it can be, you know, MailChimp, as you mentioned, or anything else. But how am I understanding the brand? Am I understanding where the leadership is and where he feels the vision should go? And then from there, so as you said, with the sales, it's getting to that point that I think that's the key point of it, man. And as you said, like, as it is, it's all about fulfillment, sales, getting the right leads in, and then having to be able to close in on that. So. Absolutely, man. You know, this has been great. Keegan, love having you on here on the show. Like, so if people wanted to learn more, because I know you said you're in the trade, people wanted to learn more about joiner services, they wanted to, you know, get a demo or however else how you go about it, where can they find?
Yep, of course. Like I've been mentioning, I think the whole time too, very active on LinkedIn. So you can find me at Keegan Dillon on LinkedIn. You can follow our socials there, Joiner Services on LinkedIn. We're on YouTube as well. And then again, with Automation Breakfast, same thing. We're on all the socials with Automation Breakfast now. And you can find myself, Sandeep, and Raul on there. Yeah, that's what I'd say. LinkedIn is definitely number one for businesses, and we try to keep it that way. So yeah, that's a good spot.
And then even with Automation Breakfast, for the folks listening, that's just more on just if people wanted to just hear your personal takes and just what's going on, right?
Day to day and the automation, AI, and robotics world. What's going on? What's the latest things people are talking about? The latest videos, the latest crazes on AI. You know, so we talk about everything within that, you know, technology and industrial manufacturing space.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, Keegan, again, thanks for on the show. For those that are listening, if you took time to listen to the whole point, we appreciate you listening in. So if you want to, you know, reach out to Keegan, he's given that support here. Even to, if you want to learn more, just kind of hear, you know, the automation takes and what him and his friends have to say, check him out at the Automation Breakfast. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys next time on the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at solonox.net.